Postscript Media, podcast for a changing planet.
I had no idea that composting is frightening to some people.
People are frightened of everything.
Oh my God, food rots. What will I do?
People hate change.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's like when they banned cigarettes from restaurants and people thought the restaurant industry was going to die.
Where are we supposed to smoke inside?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
This is Hot Buttons, a show about the future of fashion and culture on a changing planet. I'm Christina Binkley. I'm a contributing writer at Vogue Business and the Wall Street Journal. This week, we are back in the metaverse, and Natalia Modanova of DressX is our guide. Since launching in 2019, DressX has been building a multi-brand retail model around digital fashion, and we had to have them on. We'll talk sustainability, collaborations, digital design, and how the market for Web3 fashion may evolve in spite of all the headwinds facing crypto today. Rachel Kibbe of Circular Services Group is in New York. Rachel, how's it going?
It's going great, Christina. How are you?
I'm good. And the CEO of Thrilling, Shilla Kim Parker, is back. Welcome. And she joins us from the basement as usual.
As usual, nothing changes.
Okay, guys, before we get into this, I just want to have a brief discussion about Balenciaga. We had a big discussion about Balenciaga last week, and some things have evolved since then. Demna, he apologized personally. I think like last time I looked on his Instagram, he apologized like three times. He keeps trying to get it right. They did a
reorganization. And it's his only posts on his Instagram.
Yeah,
I think everything else, either it was taken down or there was nothing there before, but it's very...
It's just like, I am sorry.
How do you like my sorry now?
Is this one better? But, you know, here's the thing. The brand also issued he has also issued several apologies. One kind of explained what they're doing, and a lot of it sounded good. Like, they're going to go on a listening tour and talk to advocacy groups for against child abuse. But there's a line in there that said that they restructured their image group. And I thought, oh no, they fired some poor middle management guy who had no real control over what that campaign was, which was toddlers playing with toys in bondage gear.
At least they dropped the lawsuit, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's good.
So trying to do everything basically to save Demna is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Shilla. It's like, it's just seeing how much they can sort of appease people without doing that.
The social chatter is about going through the history of Balenciaga and how far they've gone. And I just think this is exactly not where you want to be as a brand. People talking about how off track you are and how much you are disrespecting its heritage. I don't see how you survive.
It was funny. I had a friend come up to me who loves Balenciaga, and he was saying, what do I do? Do I like get rid of all my stuff? I feel like I'm having an identity crisis because this is very much my personal style. It's not just about Demna. It's just, I really love the brand. And from an environmental perspective, I was like, no, don't get rid of it all. Like, the brand is going to recover. I just don't know if Demna will.
Yeah. I mean, he's shown incredibly bad judgment, right?
I want to understand better what was the thought process. Like, clearly it was intentional. I just want to understand why and what happened. Like, how did this happen? I feel like that is what I want to understand better. I don't think we'll ever get that.
I'm saying he won't survive. While I do think this is a pattern and it's the brand's fault and it's probably like the team's fault, like, is it really his fault? I don't know, you know? I know he probably has the ultimate say in these sort of decisions, but what truly went on, we'll never know, to your point.
Well, we do know that he, because he has been a god in fashion for quite a few years now, and he is the creative director who is responsible for the brand's creative decisions, we absolutely know who was responsible for this. I mean, even if somebody else said, why don't we try posing these little toys with young children, he decided to do that. He's the decider. So
that's what comes with the title anyways.
So Ralph Rucci is probably, if not America's greatest couturier, certainly one of them. And he has a very small clientele these days. He doesn't show anymore, but he has a very loyal clientele. And he was an assistant to Cristobal Balenciaga back in the day. And he got so angry last week about this. He's actually slid into Demna's DMs and posted, and then took a photograph of that and posted it on his own Instagram. He says, "I am sending you this message as a DM since your public forum has been closed to save you much embarrassment. My name is Ralph Rucci, and I have worked with deep devotion within the métier of couture for the past 42 years. My most significant mentor has been Monsieur Cristobal Balenciaga. I have stood by for years now and witnessed your disparaging behavior, remarks, and complete lack of acumen for this legacy. I am qualified to tell you, sir, that you are utterly unqualified to be the director of this house."
Ooh, damn.
He ends it. He goes, "Sneakers."
Oh, it's the sneakers. I was like, how else has he really disrespected the house? Oh, sneakers.
That's one way.
Okay. All right.
Okay, let's bring on Natalia. If you've followed digital fashion at all lately, you've definitely heard of DressX. Since 2019, they've been in every conversation about what fashion in the metaverse could be. They've created a retail ecosystem for digital fashion that works as well as any e-commerce platform. And they've partnered with brands, designers, influencers, and bloggers to bring digital fashion to the masses. And for those of you who may be scratching your heads wondering what digital fashion is, I should explain that it's clothing that you can wear online. You can buy an outfit and wear it on your Instagram posts or on Roblox or on your gaming avatars or in your Zoom calls, but it is never actually made IRL. It's just purely living in the digital universe. Welcome, Natalia Modenova, and congratulations, by the way, on being named to the inaugural Vogue Business 100 Innovators list that came out this week.
Thank you, Christina. So good to see you, to hear you again, and to meet in the capacity when it's not just fashion, but also tech and digital fashion. And indeed, we believe that digital fashion is a future, and it's so exciting to build it because lately all the innovations happened in the intersection of different industries. And being in a traditional fashion industry, running wholesale business and also the fashion week, we saw this development, and actually everything exciting and impactful and scalable that happened and shaped and changed fashion industry in a significant way happened with intersections of technology. So that was definitely something that was exciting for us, for both of us with Daria, because we co-founded DressX with Daria Shapovalova, and we did it a lot of other things before together, basically both the showroom and the fashion week. And really, now it's like building this future that we believe will be coming. And we honestly believe in this scale of digital fashion, which is already kind of happening in, I would say, just a virtual apparel industry. It's maybe not necessarily virtual fashion, because brands are a significant part of it, because gaming has been selling skins for years and years. I also met the founder of this game, like a social game, Second Life, at the Economist conference. We were actually speaking at the same panel, and he was sharing numbers about GDP, in particular in Second Life, but it's like millions of dollars, and most of it is outfits. That's how people present themselves online. So definitely this is already happening. And when we started, we approached brands, of course, and we approached individual creators as well. And for brands, it was like a story to hear and maybe scratch the head a little bit and come back to it later and see who will go first and what are the other cases. But the power of the creatives and the talented people who want to kind of invent something new is actually moved the needle and moved this whole industry.
You know, I have to say that I think it was, for me personally, Zoom is what made me start to be able to understand this. And full disclosure, you and I have met before. I've known Daria, your co-founder of DressX, since she was a Ukrainian television announcer, you know, a million years ago. And you guys had, I think I was at one of those 2019 pop-ups that you guys did. You had me come out and sit on a panel, I remember, in Santa Monica or someplace. And I had no clue what the hell you guys were doing. I just like, it was like, doing something and they think there's such a thing as digital fashion. Okay. I get it now. I get it. I'm looking at you and you're wearing digital fashion on our Zoom call, but I have a gazillion questions about where it's going. And for instance, you've got Adidas on DressX right now. You've done a collab with them. And when I saw that, I thought, well, what's to stop Adidas from just doing it themselves without DressX and sort of putting digital fashion on their own website and cutting out DressX in the same way that brands cut out department stores over the past 15 years and opened their own retail? Can we start there?
Starting from tough questions, but of course, happy to cover. When we started DressX, we understood and we were sure that every brand will have this line of digital fashion, this category of digital fashion, and it applies for all the brands, mass market brands, luxury brands, all of them. Just like, for example, sneakers became a category that like brands like Chanel and Gucci started doing sneakers. It was not the case like 30 years ago, right? And the significant revenue comes from that. That's the business point of it. Same situation with beauty products. When number of people who can buy Chanel bag, this total addressable market is X, but so many more people can afford the Chanel lipstick, for example. So the total addressable market for Chanel lipstick is way higher than the market for the bags, right? And we believe that digital fashion is that next category that will help brands to build new relationships with customers, approach new audiences. It will make the fashion industry more inclusive.
How is it more inclusive? Because you can do digital fashion in any size and shape, you mean? Or
any size and shape, any geography. You don't have to kind of wait for delivery. It's, yes, a size and shape, that's for sure something that is that is an issue in a traditional fashion industry, because if you want to wear like a dress from the runway, sometimes it's super hard to find the right size in the stores because it goes, I've been in a wholesale business. I know this like formula 1-2-2-1. When like a smaller stores sometimes would place an order immediately in the showroom and they would just say like, okay, I want this SKU in sizes, right? And sizes go like extra small, small, medium, large. And it can be like extra large and like others and like extra smalls. But usually it goes from like extra small to large. And they say 1-2-2-1. It means one extra small, two medium, one large. And the same statistic is for the large stores as well, the ones who are placing like big orders. But still, it's like the same curve.
Same here. Size range.
Exactly. So in digital, it doesn't matter. And also today you are one size, tomorrow you are a different size. Still, you can wear digital fashion. It would fit everyone. And another thing is definitely a creative tool, because look what like Instagram did to fashion. Everyone became a content creator and online persona is so much more important than the physical persona. And how much content, especially people from the fashion industry, should be creating. And that's also not super sustainable because, again, we worked a lot with influencers and sometimes they were like, well, I cannot even scope time to unbox everything that I receive. Because I have a brand partnership, but then a lot of brands just send me it as a gift, hoping that I will wear it. But I cannot have like so many events to go to change so many times. And a lot of clothing just like stays there, but it's like deliveries and things like that. So sustainability actually has been super important pillar for us from day one. And we actually couldn't find the proper data on how much more sustainable digital fashion is compared to the physical. And we started our own research, and now we patented the methodology of calculating environmental impact of digital fashion compared to physical.
I'd like to know some of the elements too that you're measuring. Like, I guess it's electricity use for digital fashion, and then
Absolutely. So what we compare mostly is the usage of water and the carbon emissions. So for usage of water, we can say that it's like really zero. And for carbon emissions, it's significantly lower. It, on average, digital fashion item emits 97% less of CO2 compared to the physical. And again, it's on average. We can go into like digital couture and compare a super complicated, beautiful dress, and the rendering time for it will take longer, and the computing power will be significantly higher, and compare it to the t-shirt, then the ratio will change. But still, on average, it's a fair number, and it's been verified with Ellen MacArthur Foundation and United Nations Environmental Impact Department also reviewed that, and we worked with most of the stakeholders related to it. But we continue this research because more and more technologies emerge. Like, for example, there was a boom of blockchain, and there was a lot of conversation, is it sustainable or not sustainable? How you do an NFT? It's so bad for environment. But really, it's important. There are different improvements even in the blockchain technology, like moving from the proof of work to proof of stake protocols. It's like very technical terms, but still, this is something that the industry care about, and we definitely follow all of this and implement all the innovations as well. But getting back to the Adidas question, actually, why not doing it on their own? Because it's a very early stage and the very kind of emerging industry. However, I have to say Adidas are very much advanced in the whole 3D processes, in the whole 3D developments, because a lot of the brands actually, like PVH Group, is super also advanced in it. They have a huge library of 3D assets, but it's helping the production of physical items. So the whole 3D technology in fashion industry has been used only to reduce number of samples and streamline the process of creation of the prototypes, a little bit in a wholesale, but not significantly. And now we understand and come up with this concept that it doesn't have to be only on a backstage, all this 3D world, because this content is actually valuable already without any physical aspect. Because when we communicate online, we communicate so much more. And when we wear something, we use this as a language to tell a story about ourselves.
But how does that stop Adidas from just saying, oh, DressX is a good idea, and we can just do that on our own, and we're just going to have a tab on our website that's 3D clothes you can buy?
Well, they actually do it. They did an NFT drop, and they sold a collection of certain outfits as NFTs. But then what are you going to do with those NFTs? We provide the utility. We provide the wearable aspect to it. And this is actually how DressX started. And this is what is unique about DressX. I remember the very beginning when actually there was an inspiring example of the fabricant happening, and they sold the dress, the digital dress, and they created the collection. But it was available for free to download the 3D files. And I would go and download, and you cannot do anything about it if you are not a 3D designer. You have to learn a software. You have to buy a license for the software. Like, you have to spend a significant number of hours putting it on yourself. So that's definitely not something that a majority of people would do and would enjoy, but they would definitely enjoy this image of themselves wearing something fun and cool and different. And actually, this whole Adidas thing was presented at the event here in Miami, which was dedicated to this new collection. And there were several activations. It was like huge screens with this jacket, with this puffers, and with the beautiful animation, how it's created. And that's fun, but there was a huge line to get to this like dressing room to try this experience on. That's exactly what fashion is about. You can actually wear it. It's not just to collect it, but it's to apply it on yourself, to make it personal.
So that's what you've brought. That's what DressX is bringing to the table. But let me ask you this then. Do you foresee a time, and I'd be curious to hear you put a time frame on it, when most fashion brands will also offer digital clothes?
Yes, I believe it will happen very soon because we see it happening already. There is a Gucci collection in Roblox or like Marine Serre collection in Zepeto. We see Balenciaga collection in Meta, along with Prada, and DressX was the next brand to join this list and now dominating this avatar store with a significant number of items. It's already happening. It just doesn't come as one solution for every brand. This is really interesting time how brands finding their voice in this digital space and finding the way how to translate their aesthetics into this digital realm and digital reality. And this is where DressX come into the place. And having experience in the fashion industry and kind of understanding how important certain aspects for the creative directors and how it can be translated into the digital format and understanding the tech part of it, because there are no kind of, on the first side, there is no limitations. You can wear anything in digital, but then there is a hardware limitations. There is a software limitations. There is a data limitations. Like, okay, you cannot do 100% like real render on your phone. Maybe because your phone is amazing, but the connection is not enough. Or you have a 5G, but the device doesn't have enough GPU power. So there are all these things are happening as well. Or you can make an amazing outfit, but like it should have a certain number of polygons. So it's like a lot of this technical aspect, which kind of on a consumer level or on a purely creative level is not happening. But that's exactly why creative technologies profession emerged. And like DressX is this kind of platform with expertise in both, combining this to make it a usable product for the customers in the end.
Do you believe that people are going to be as loyal to brands in the metaverse as they are in real life? And the reason I ask that question is because it seems like it's so expensive and there's so many resources you need to launch a collection where creators ostensibly can just have software to design clothes in the metaverse for people. And when I was playing around in your app, I felt much less, I wasn't looking at the brands. I was just looking at how interesting the designs were to me. So it could be made by someone down the street or it could be made by Prada. I didn't care. I just wanted to try it on if it looked cool. So that makes me wonder, how important is brand going to be in digital fashion?
That's a great question. And of course, brands will still play a role. And even now at like Art Basel, you go and see this artworks. And there were several art pieces where it was like brands featured. And there was a Gucci and Louis Vuitton. It was not some like super cool new brand like Jacquemus or like whoever, right? It was like brands that people understand this is fashion. That when I say people, I mean the majority of people on the planet Earth. If you ask what is a fashion brand, so this will not go away anywhere. This new dialogue is the metaverse, because this is the place where you can launch a brand, where you can have a relationship with your audience, with your community, build your community, and supply them with amazing digital outfits that are unique, that are amazing. And actually, that's another great reason why we started DressX. And we opened it up from the very beginning to all kinds of 3D designers who wanted to start their own brand. Because we've been working with talents a lot, and we know it costs like tens of thousands of dollars to launch your brand, and then it doesn't mean it takes off. But here it's really a place where a lot of talented people can find themselves, can build a business based on that can find their voice in all this like noisy space. And the first six designers who joined Rosex 2 years ago, some of them were just students who couldn't launch the physical brand tomorrow, but they were creating and it was great. And they are early adopters.
What TikTok and social media did for creators, you don't have to have a news station and you don't have to be an actor to become an influencer and famous now. And sort of, so you're providing this platform for creators to have access to an audience at a lower sort of entry point, lower cost, and it could potentially democratize this type of art. I did want to sort of drill down on the sustainability piece. I noticed that on your site, you said, don't shop less, shop digital fashion. And I love that. It's very catchy. It's a great tagline. You also have stated in some of your articles that your goal is to sell 100 or 1 billion digital fashion items to replace 1% of physical. And you said that you've been quoted, you and your co-founder talking about sort of your mission as democratizing fashion and getting instant verification from followers. So all of this is interesting to me because the concept of selling more at a lower price point, democratizing fashion, that sounds a lot like how fast fashion was described and what sort of brought people to fast fashion because they felt like it was more accessible, that fashion was more accessible. Now, what you're saying is that this is digital, it's lower environmental impact, it's your goal is to replace physical goods and replace those habits of purchasing physical goods with digital. But it brings me to the question is, can we really afford to keep encouraging people and validating consumption? You're wearing a bucket hat that is beautiful. It gets me really excited. I want all of them, but it's changing colors and shapes. And it just makes me think that maybe, is there any psychology-based evidence that encouraging digital consumption is going to actually replace this addiction we have to physical goods? And I know that's a tough question to ask, and I'm asking you to sort of predict the future, but I'd love to hear you talk more about that.
It's a great question. And actually, it's related to the previous one that you were asking about the creators and the role of the individual creators and the brands. So first of all, there is a room for everyone. Second of all, we say don't shop less, shop digital, not to replace all of the physical consumption. We are pro physical consumption. However, it should be done smart because there is a statistics from Barclays banks and actually it's quite an old statistic already. However, they found out that in the United Kingdom, 9% of fashion purchases happen for the sake of taking a picture for the content creation. It's 9%, and it's a great goal to replace this 9% with digital. That will be already a huge impact, and that's how we look at this point. However, getting to a question, of course, we are asking ourselves, and it's a part of our research about the displacement rate of digital and physical fashion, and we keep monitoring that. And
how do you monitor that? How do you monitor they bought this, not that?
We just like have a focus groups and we ask them a bunch of questions related to their purchases. So we ask people who are buying digital fashion on a regular basis. We are asking people who bought digital fashion once. It's kind of their opinion. Of course, it can be biased at some point, but still it's kind of the most evident data that is out there in the market. And actually now a lot of companies are just coming to us, asking for the data, asking all these questions, because this is a very new industry and kind of nobody knows the answers. That's why we are drilling and asking and finding those answers, just like we did for this sustainability aspect, and find out, is it really like how much of CO2 it is polluting? And we calculate it and we monitor it for now. So I can say, I can give you some numbers. 77% ready to pay more for a sustainable fashion. Of course, that 61% is a level of acceptance for digital garments in social media or to replace some real items, according to the participants, of course. 11.5% responded that they shopped for clothes to make a post in social media. So, of course, we are targeting these people who care about their online persona and curate their image with physical fashion for their online persona. But we give them a new tool, which is more sustainable, which is more affordable, which is more inclusive, and which is more scalable.
I'd love to hear a little bit more about your origin story, how this got started. And could you tell us a little bit about how you're funded, if it's VC funding, and how you make your money?
I think it would be really great for folks who are not familiar with DressX, like even just taking them through what is the purchasing journey like and how does the checkout process work, because that's unusual.
So let me start with what DressX is. DressX is your meta closet. Meta closet is a wardrobe of digital-only items that can be worn across different digital spaces. Metaverse is such a hyped up word now, but yes, it's to wear it in the metaverse. However, what does it mean step by step? We started from the first use case of letting people dress them up in digital fashion on the photos. For posting it in social media on Instagram was the very first use case, and it was very popular on TikTok as well. And that's all the type of pictures like, oh, look at me before, look at me after, look how fun it is. And interesting point that majority of users would not hide that it's digital. They would say, oh my God, look, it's so cool. It's like just digital. We wanted to make this process very easy for people because we understand that the concept of digital fashion is pretty new and challenging. And that's why we didn't do it on blockchain, for example, from day one, because it would add a huge layer of complexity. We wanted to give them a simple journey, how people use, like how they know how to shop. You go online, you scroll, you see something you like, you check this item closer, and you put it on in your cart. And then you upload the picture of yourself where you want to see yourself wearing this item. And you check out, you pay with the card, like super easy journey, and you receive it back to your email, the same one that you provided for the email confirmation. However, also we understand that we should get closer to the notion of the wardrobe of a person for digital spaces, and we launched a mobile app, and it's available right now on iOS and on Android on both platforms, because again, for us, it's very important to include everyone in this conversation.
Who uses it more, Android or iOS?
We have more people on Android. However, people who spend more time in the app is iOS users.
Huh, that's interesting. So the Android people are curious, but not really hanging out. And the iOS people are...
Really taking care of their image and really taking care of curating their image and using the available tool for that. Is for this beginning of our conversation, I think it was on off record, but we were joking that people in fashion use iPhone and people in tech use Android. So that's a proof. Data proves that.
And Natalia, then for the bucket hat that you're wearing, how would somebody get that? Because are you able, for the item you purchase, you're able to rewear it in different contexts, or you only get that one image per use?
That's a great question. So here I will make an analogy with the physical world again. When you go to gym and when you go to gala and when you go to office, you would definitely wear different outfits. And different social environments are also like that. So when you are posting something on LinkedIn, it's probably something different from what you would post on TikTok. That's exactly how we approach this usability question. So we create collections for Roblox, and we understand it's mostly kids and like teenagers are in Roblox, and they would want to have some like wings or like something like that. That's exactly why when we did the collaboration with Dundas, with Peter Dundas, and created a collection for our blogs, we were selecting the outfits with him and his team that should be kind of translated from physical to digital. And we selected this beautiful accessory that Emrata was wearing for Met Gala in 2019, this like wings around your ears accessory. And this is very beautiful one. And it was viral and super popular, and it was in all the red carpet reports. And Roblox audience embraced it. And that's to the question of like how brands should approach their present. It should be something relevant to the platform, relevant to the audience. And that's how we approach it as well. Though this particular hat is a part of the NFT drop that we do. So we distribute digital fashion off-chain, as I mentioned, something that is super easy to buy with credit card or to have a subscription in our mobile app just with like one click of a button, just any other subscription in any other app. And you can have access to more exclusive items in digital fashion because we also provide an opportunity to try it for free.
If I bought the hat that you have on now, could I wear it on our Zoom call today? I could post it on Instagram. And then next year, when I want to go to an event where I think it's the right thing, I could use it again. So I can repeatedly wear it on different places. Or do I just get to use it once?
For the photo look, meta look, you just use it once. So it can be compared to the short-term renting, like Rent the Runway. You get a dress, you wear it for event, you give it back, but you wore it and you have pictures, you have a proof of it, right? And you don't have an ownership over this dress. However, when you buy this hat that I'm wearing, and this is an NFT, you can wear it and then you can sell it afterwards. And then a new owner will be able to start wearing it, whereas you will lose an opportunity to wear it at the same time when they can do it. So that's how it works. And when we announce certain items, we always specify where they have a utility. So for example, when we launch a collection for Roblox, of course, it works in Roblox, but also sometimes we give an opportunity to try on the same outfits in augmented reality. When we launch this bucket hat as an NFT, we clearly say that you can wear it in augmented reality and it's an exclusive experience only for the holders. And also we are catering the NFT native people who already have other types of NFTs, and we say that they can dress up not only their photos, but their PFP profile pictures like Port Apes or their clone X or their World of Women, all these things that people use as their profile pictures. And they can curate their profile pictures that are kind of NFT native with our accessory. So that's how we position it, and that's the difference between items that are distributed off-chain and on-chain.
Are you able to give a sense of scale in any way, whatever you're comfortable sharing in terms of users or design sold or just the amount of growth you've seen over the past couple of years?
Yes, of course. So I will start with the number of items available. We started from just 6 designers and maybe 15 items on the platform. And now it's over 3,000 items and we work with over 300 designers. We can say that on average, people tried on digital fashion almost 300,000 times, which is very important for us.
And how do you make your money? I know I keep asking you that. I'm assuming you take a percentage of the sales.
We take a percentage of the sales when it's a designer's item, as a marketplace would do. We keep the whole revenue from our own design items. And if we distribute it with our partner platforms like Roblox or Meta or Zepeta, it's also a revenue share model. When it's an NFTs, again, it's a revenue share model with a brand, with a co-creator. And in the mobile app, there is a subscription model for users to have an opportunity to wear certain number of looks during certain period of time, very similar to Rent the Runway does, but in digital.
Interoperability. So What's the future of that? And what I mean by that, you're wearing a bucket hat right now on a Zoom call. I don't know, the audience isn't going to be able to see that. But in the future, I think the goal would be for potentially that to be able to be worn on Instagram, on any other social platform or metaverse platform that we haven't conceived of yet. But is the goal in the future to have an interoperable wardrobe across platform, across gaming? Because that's really exciting to me. I like to wear things over and over.
Yes, absolutely. And that's our vision and that's what we are building. When we started, it was just one use case per one item. And now we bundle several different use cases in one item. And of course, the price of the digital outfit will also depend on the number of utilities that are provided together with this item. And right now, if you buy it and you can wear it only on Instagram is one price, but if you wear it on Instagram and in like Roblox and on Zoom, it's going to be a higher price. But this is something that is coming because when people talk about interoperability, they usually start from the notion of the 3D files, because 3D file for augmented reality is not the same 3D file that would be used for Meta avatar. So that's the first and very important question of making the asset and the visual interoperable. But then there is another very important issue with interoperability of the ownership. Because when you buy something in Roblox, for example, you are not owning the item, the platform owning the item. And how you can take it out of Roblox and wear on Instagram? There's no way.
So all those platforms would have to be in agreement with each other on
That's how right. Yeah, That's right.
Oh my God, this is complicated. Wow. So you have a partnership with Meta, right?
Yes.
What can you tell us about what it's like to work with Meta?
Yeah, so first of all, for us, it's great to work with Meta because we are aiming for the scale. And of course, with the scale that Meta achieved, it's definitely a great kind of example for us. And also we see usually when we collaborate with the platform that has a big audience, they love the value proposition that we bring. And on a bigger numbers, it's even more obvious than on a smaller numbers. So it's really amazing to work with them. We started when this avatar shop was not available in all the countries. It was a very early days and they rolled out it step by step. And it was amazing how actually response from the users was, because people from different countries would approach us and say, wow, that's amazing, but I don't see it. But like, how do I do that? And I'm ready to take a credit that we actually educated a lot of people on how to start using their avatars in Meta. And a lot of people would not even have their avatar just yet. But then when they saw that they can actually, then they saw, yeah, I can dress them.
That's the role of fashion in the world. Super quick. Have you dressed Mark Zuckerberg? Yes or no?
Yes, and we did it even before we started official partnership in Meta. If you go on our Instagram, he is wearing a bunch of outfits from DressX.
Please tell me it's more than khakis and a t-shirt.
Absolutely. It's like super fantastical outfits. We actually made it as soon as they announced that they will have an avatar store.
Before they close us out, I want to address something here. Natalia, you and Daria are from Ukraine, and I know you're living in the United States now, but I'm sure you have family there that are impacted. How are your family? How's that going?
On a personal level, everyone is alive, but of course, we all have a lot of very close people who are either fighting there or really, we can say like, continue running a business in Ukraine is a kind of a fight right now, right? So even people who run a beauty business, people still do that, but still it's very challenging. Next winter is going to be even harder than this one. And this is, again, we can come back to the power of digital fashion because that's a tool to deliver a certain message. And immediately in the first day, we thought, okay, what we can do, and we launched this collection of digital fashion with Ukrainian flag colors. We are coming from the fashion industry and we understand that some of the like influencers who translate this beautiful life and like beautiful line style and this dream life, they would maybe talk about it, but they don't want to like scare people or put some content that is blurred and Instagram says, okay, this is like, are you sure you want to see that? It's like something scary there. So we used this fashion as a tool to still communicate about this war, about this problem, and like bring attention. Madonna was wearing this dress from Support Ukraine collection.
It's, by the way, it should, I just describe it. It literally, the dresses are largely like the Ukrainian flag, that beautiful golden flax color below and the sky blue above, but fantastical, serious. I mean, it's fashion.
Yes, and it's shaped as a heart. So it's like showing this like love and support in the way that people know how to communicate in this like fashion language.
You're raising money for Ukraine with that, aren't you?
Yes, this collection unfortunately became a permanent collection. We hope it will be temporary, but it's still available. And the funds that are raised through this collection go to support creative community of Ukraine, because there are a lot of like stylists, photographers, like 3D designers. There was a case when a person left the house and never came back, but means of creation, means of work, as they're like computer or like a monitor. So we tend to help people from creative industries to continue working, to continue creating value for the world. It's not just giving fish, but giving a tool to keep giving their creativity out to the world.
I'm glad to hear, by the way, that your family is, I don't know if safe is the right word. You noticed you said they're alive. And I guess in the state of things there right now, that's something to be celebrated. So I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much for joining us and helping us to understand. The more I learn about digital fashion, the less mesmerizing it is. It seemed hard to grasp to me at first for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, I understand. But now actually more of the big players are jumping into this, and there is more data about digital fashion becomes available. When we were starting, it was like a blank paper almost. And then you see the Bloomberg report and like Morgan Stanley report, and like there is a serious people looking into that and giving their data as well. So it's becoming tangible, and we're big believers in it.
I'll tell you what, if I'm putting something on digitally, it's going to be something I would never wear in real life. It's got to be going there. Natalia, thank you very much. Now it is time for Hot Buttons. What do we got here?
Oh, I got my first tattoo ever. It's from my mother used to send us handmade Valentines to us kids, because she was a screen printer. So she'd screen print, I love you, and then she would sign it mom. So I got that on my arm.
Oh, and it's in the same signature. I saw you posted that on your Instagram. It's in the same signature of your mom's signature.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Okay. That is so sweet.
It is. I'm wiping my eyes.
Well, it's hard to follow that one, but this is a hot button from deep in suburbia.
Lay it on us, Shilla.
So I apologize. This is a very suburban, relevant hot button. But, you know, now is the time, and up until a few weeks ago is when you're dealing with, like, lots of leaves. And NPR sent out this tweet that said, every fall, Americans send about 8 million tons of bagged leaves to landfills. And to remind us that you don't have to do that, because actually they decompose naturally, and they're good for the soil. And you can just, you know, push them off to the side of the yard.
So you're saying they're compostable?
Yeah, exactly. Into plastic bags and then to landfills. Like, that's not right.
Here's mine. Following on that, Los Angeles has an ordinance now that they're implementing that people cannot throw away their green waste in their kitchen into the trash. So it's, So that we LA people are going to have to compost.
Who regulates that? Like, is somebody like going through your trash and being like, oh, those are eggshells?
You're going to get cited and you can be fined if you put eggshells in your regular trash. And they're doing experiments with, so certain neighborhoods are already having to do this and others are not. I compost already. So I mean, my mom composted when I was a kid because she was a hippie. So, you know, I'm used to it. But you cannot imagine the level of freak out and the questions on Next Door Neighbor from people about what's going to happen. So that's all for the show. Please support us by following us on Twitter at Hot Buttons Pod and now on Instagram at hotbuttons.pod, or send a link to friends or colleagues and go to Apple or Spotify and give us a rating. We are also streaming on Amazon Music. We really appreciate your support. If you want to email us with story ideas, please do send a note to hotbuttons@postscriptaudio.com or leave us a voicemail at our call-in line. It's 508-622-5361. Give us a call. Hot Buttons is hosted by me, Christina Binkley, Sheila Kim Parker, and Rachel Kibbe. The show is produced by Postscript Media. Our senior editor is Anne Bailey. Our engineers are Greg Villefranc and Sean Marquand. Cecily Meza Martinez is our managing producer. Stephen Lacey, Scott Clavena, and Rachel Kibbe are our executive producers. Postscript Media makes podcasts at the intersection of climate with culture, politics, business, and tech. Postscript Media is supported by Prelude Ventures. Prelude is a venture capital firm focused on climate solutions across energy, food, agriculture, transportation, logistics, and advanced materials. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch up with you next week.
And maybe you remember there was this presentation and like Mark looking in the mirror and there is an avatar and there were a bunch of memes about it. So we were like, well, let's just show how we see that. And maybe okay. It was like fake it until you make it. So
I hope you put him in the dragon outfit I tried on your site. Yeah. That was my
smashing in your dragon outfit. That, actually, I could see him. Wait, that would work.
Me too.